Everyone under the sound of my voice is either in a family or is close to a family that is falling apart. Whether it's a husband and wife relationship that has become paralyzed. Whether it's children who are living rebelliously. Or whether it's a generational curse that you are under. Reaping the harvest of things your own father did because you have fallen in line with their way of thinking and acting, or you have been so stamped by their impact on your life that you have brought those problems into your family and things that you perhaps said you would never do because your father and mother did them, you find yourself doing. Or perhaps it's the stronghold of a blended family, where you have brought your kids and they have brought their kids and you've tried to work this thing out, but the influence of the other mates that you're no longer with, or the resistance of a new parent by your kids, or by trying to adapt to one another while you at the same time try to adapt to two different sets of children, can create strongholds. Vice grips on the relationship that keep it from being what God intended. And yet you come to church every week and hear the word of God, are exposed to it, but the stronghold only seems to disappear for a moment. And so you want to throw in the towel, you want to go to the divorce court, you want to give up because you just don't see how in the world you will be released from this stronghold. The principle is clear. Only spiritual weapons can defeat spiritual strongholds. And often we apply spiritual weapons last and not first. What is the cause? First of all, the cause of family strongholds. In Genesis chapter 3. The deterioration of the first family, Adam, was caused or initiated by an angel. Remember, our series is spiritual warfare. And an angel disrupted the first home. For Satan is an angel. He came and he visited the first family and caused spiritual deterioration, which led to relational deterioration. It wasn't relationships first that went bad between human beings. It was relationship with God that went bad. And it worked itself out in the human environment. So we can trace the first family breakup to an angel. And I would like to go on record as saying we can trace every family breakup in its root to an angel. Because Satan's premier goal next to destroying you is the destruction of your family. Now, it's interesting, Satan's methodology to bring a stronghold into this first family. And we know it was a stronghold because it flipped over to their children, for Cain killed Abel. So this wasn't just a one-time argument. This became the foundation of the murder of siblings. The first thing Satan got to produce control of this first family was the reversal of biblical responsibilities and biblical roles. He told her two very important things that are implicitly stated in the text, and that is, lady, you don't need God, and you sure enough don't need Adam. He got her to act independently of God. He got her to use her own reasoning and her own rationale to reverse God's ordained order and to think in terms of independence. He then, through that process, influenced Adam becoming a passive male, for verse 6 says that Adam was with her. He heard the conversation, but he did nothing about it. He, like many men today, stood on the sidelines. Eve took over the leadership. He became the submissive one. The roles were reversed, and Satan had an open door. Whenever roles are reversed in a relationship, you have set up the context whereby Satan can infiltrate the home. Marriage conflict was the result of the role reversal. The failure of Eve to remain in her role, the failure of Adam to remain in his role, opened up the door for the devil to take over both roles. And it was a disaster for the family. According to verse 7, they had to sew fig leaves up to hide themselves, for they became ashamed of each other, of themselves. And instead of openness and authenticity, there was hiddenness, secrets. You notice in the scripture that we read that they passed the blame. Adam, who was so excited about Eve a few minutes earlier, now says to God, it's her fault. And how many times have you said to God, yourself, your neighbor, your coworker, it's her fault. It's his fault. If he wasn't like this, I wouldn't be like that. There was the passing of the buck. The woman says, it's not my fault. It's the devil's fault. And everybody passed the blame. Nobody was willing to pause and own up to their sin so that they could get it right. The curse was staggering. Because not only would the woman, verse 16, have problems in childbirth, but there would be conflict in the home. The husband shall rule over you. In other words, men would seek to control women by domination. Evil as it is, wrong as it is, men would seek to dominate women, and we're seeing far too much of that today. And the desire of the woman, the desire for a relationship, the desire for a partnership would become a battle rather than an automatic blessing. The man would now, according to verse 17, come home tired because he would have to labor all day and he would have to exert energy. So instead of coming home to serve his wife, he would come home to be served by her, and that would produce conflict. All because of an angel, a battle that took place where the first family left God out. God did a gracious thing. It's often not viewed as a gracious thing, but in verse 24, it was the best thing God could have done. So he drove the man out. And at the east of the Garden of Eden, he stationed the cherubim and the flaming sword, which turned every direction to guard the way to the tree of life. God acted kindly to Adam by driving him out. Why? Because in the middle of the garden was the tree of life. If Adam would have gone after he sinned and eaten of the tree of life, then he would have been permanently locked in to his sinful state and there would be no hope. If Adam would have been able to go and take Eve and eat of the tree of life, having rebelled against God, they would have been locked in to their sin forever and not have hope. And that's why I can come to you this morning with good news for you and your family. That no matter how bad the angel Satan has infiltrated your home, no matter how devastating he has been on your family and in the life of your children, no matter how horrific he has been in bringing chaos to your world, no matter how unblended your blended family seeks to be and how unblended it performs, because God drove Adam and Eve out of the garden and would not let them eat of the tree of life, They were not locked into their sin, which means that they could find hope in God's salvation. I have good news for your stronghold today, if it is in your family, and it is in most families, and that is that there is another tree. Not only the tree that was in the midst of the garden, it was the tree that Jesus hung on. There's another tree. And while Adam and Eve didn't get the bite of that tree because they were driven out that they might find life through another tree, you and I who know Jesus Christ have been introduced to a new tree. And if you've come to Jesus Christ, you've bitten of that tree, and that tree has given you life. The problem is, even though we've bitten of the right tree, Satan still knows how to get into our homes. The cause of family strongholds is satanic infiltration. Let me say that again. The cause of family stronghold is angelic infiltration. Satan or one of his minions infiltrate the family through the flesh or through the world or through your past or through any number of things, and he exacerbates evil that is already present. How does he do it? What are the conditions of family stronghold? What does he use to bring about discord? And I'm just not talking about an argument. I'm talking about a stronghold where you are locked into a problem you can't break out of. He uses a number of things. Let me give you a few of them. One of the vehicles through which Satan gets opportunity to bring a stronghold into your home is unresolved anger. Look with me at Ephesians chapter 4. Unresolved anger. He says in verse 25, "Therefore, laying aside falsehood, speak truth, each one of you, with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity." It is the prolonged buildup of anger that provides the steering wheel for Satan to turn a problem into a stronghold. Because he says in verse 27, for Satan that becomes a what? An opportunity. Satan needs certain vehicles in order to break into your life and to break into your home, and unresolved anger is one of them. That is anger that has been allowed to accumulate for which you have not addressed or gotten help to address. And any counselor knows that many of the problems we face is due to unresolved anger. Where this verse was not applied, and not only did the sun go down on our wrath, the moon went down on our wrath, the decade went down on our wrath, and we won't get rid of it till the grave. Unresolved anger at that mate, at those children, at mom, at dad. And that unresolved anger gives Satan a stronghold in you. And not only does unresolved anger give Satan a stronghold in you, everybody else has to pay for what one person did. Suppose you were at a restaurant and somebody brought you a bill for $10,000, the sum total of all the receipts that they took in, or all the bills that were accumulated by all the people who ate in the restaurant, and they expect you to pay it all. Your argument would be, that's not fair for me to have to pay for what everybody else ate. And it's not fair for everybody in your world to have to pay for what one person did. And yet, some of us are making our children pay for what our daddy did. Some of you ladies are making your husbands pay for what your father did, or on and on and on and on. It's not the problem that you're angry. The problem is that the anger has been left unresolved. Now, it's easy to say that. It's another thing to do it. Is that you must treat unresolved anger, and the only way to do that is to release the offender. Maybe by a letter where you sit down and write, "So and so, you hurt me deeply. But I cannot let your hurt control the rest of my life. And so for my benefit, I release you. It may be through a phone call. Because I care about me and my future and the way this thing is causing me to treat everybody else. For my sake, I release you. He uses another thing to destroy families and to bring them in strongholds. He uses rebellion. Rebellion means to go against God's authorized order of authority. 2 Peter has some strong words about rebellion as it relates to angels and the angelic conflict, and he ties it into people. And then I'll relate it to the family. Look at what he says in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 4. For if God did not spare angels when they sinned, but cast them into hell and committed them to pits of darkness reserved for judgment. And he didn't spare the ancient world. So he didn't spare angels, and he didn't spare the ancient world during Noah's time. And if he condemned, verse 6, Sodom and Gomorrah, reducing them to ashes, rescuing, verse 7, Lot. Then he comes in verse 10 and he says, and especially those who indulge in the flesh and its corrupt desires and despise authority. Daring self-willed, they do not tremble when they revile angelic majesties. Whereas angels, who are greater in might and power, verse 11 says, do not bring a prevailing judgment against them before the Lord. But these, like unreasoning animals, born as creatures of instinct to be captured and killed, reviling where they have no knowledge, will in the destruction of those creatures also be destroyed. He says these people have no respect for powerful angels, and therefore they place themselves under the judgment of God. The point is simply this. Wherever there is rebellion against God's legitimate chain of command, there is God's judgment and not God's help. If you are rebelling against the authority of Christ over your life and over your home, don't blame God if your family's falling apart, man. If you bought into the feminism lie, if you bought into the women's lib lie, and I'm not talking about equal pay for equal work, I'm talking about not respecting God's chain of command in the family, because God must always operate by virtue of his chain if you're going to get his help to break your stronghold. God said in Exodus chapter 20, he said that down to the third and fourth generation could be cursed by the disobedience of the parents if the kids don't reverse it themselves because of what parents can hand over to their children. And many of us as families are not only messing up our lives, we didn't already ruin our grandchildren. Because we've set a series of events at work in our rebellion against God's authority that will show up in them. Let me give you an example of this in 1 Corinthians 11. His concern is the role of women in the church, but he lays out a principle here in talking about that that illustrates my point. 1 Corinthians 11. He says in verse 3, but I want you to understand that Christ is the head of every man, the man is the head of a woman, and God is the head of Christ. So this even applies to Jesus. He's under the authority of the Father. Every male, every Christian male is under the authority of Christ, and every wife is under the authority of her husband. Now please notice verse 10. Therefore, the woman ought to have a symbol of authority on her head. Because of the angels. Now that's interesting. He's talking about a woman doing something publicly in the service, and he talks about her having a covering over her head, but the reason he gives is because of the angels. Now the question is, what in the world does a woman having a covering have to do with angels? Everything. Here's what it is. If this woman in this particular church was reflecting a rebellious heart against her husband or against the male leadership of the church, and so she broke up into independent speech unauthorized in order to assert her independence, as illustrated by the removal. Oftentimes the woman wore a headdress and they would take off their covering as a way of refusing to submit to God's ordained authorities. That not only in Paul's mind did she rebel against her husband or the male leadership, she rebelled in the midst of angels. Because the Bible says when we come to worship, we join angels, Hebrews chapter 12. You say, well, what's the big deal? So I insulted angels. Let me tell you the big deal. When you insult angels because you show them you are rebelling against authority, then what you can bank on is that God will not supply you, lady, any angelic assistance in dealing with that man that you have to deal with. When a woman rebels against legitimate authority, she rebels against angelic assistance. Because angels are one of the primary ways that God comes and he provides help to his children. So in this case, a rebellious woman who in front of the angels rebel because they're in a context of worship, then put themselves in a position where God will not provide angelic assistance to the needs in their lives. Another thing that will produce a stronghold in chapter 7 of 1 Corinthians is selfishness. He says in verse 3, let the husband fulfill his duty to his wife, and let the wife also to her husband. And he says, stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again, lest Satan tempt you because of your lack of self-control. He says a third thing, selfishness. Now he's talking about the area of sexual intimacy, but the point of bringing it up was selfishness. That the husband was so selfish, he wouldn't meet the needs of his wife. The wife was so selfish, she wouldn't meet the needs of her husband. And that went beyond just the physical, but the things that lead up to the physical, the relationship that should eventuate in the physical. And he says, stop, verse 5, depriving one another. Except both agree, lest it become a vehicle for the devil. And so when husbands and wives go days and weeks and months without talking, you didn't just go mute on one another. You said, Satan, you are now welcome into my home. Because the devil is looking for an opportunity. You do not have to open the door for the devil. Unlock it. He'll open it himself. And he has infiltrated far too many families, far too many times. Too many of us want to get a divorce before we've dealt with the spiritual problem. You want to get rid of your mate and you haven't even dealt with your own selfishness. You want to get rid of your husband when you've not submitted as the church should submit to Christ. You want to, well, my mother raised me like this. Well, if your mother didn't raise you like God said raise you, mama was wrong. And if your daddy didn't raise you in concert with what God says, daddy was wrong. And we still have too many mothers and fathers in our relationships. Either directly or indirectly, thereby because they're on the telephone or because they're still influencing. So either by unresolved anger, by rebellion, or by selfishness, Satan can create a stronghold in the home. So then, what's the cure? The cure for the family stronghold, the cause, is angelic intervention in the family. The conditions, unresolved anger, rebellion, selfishness, all are vehicles through which he comes in. What is the cure? And I know what some of you are saying, because I hear it all the time. I'm trying, right? I tried. The man says, I tried. The woman says, I tried. The parents say, we're trying. The kids say, we're trying. Everybody's trying. But the question is not, are you trying? The question is, what are you trying? Are you trying spiritual weapons, or are you just using a little secular method, sprinkling a little Jesus on top? What are you trying? It's not that you tried. The issue that we face is, what did you try? What did you try? Colossians 3 says very quickly what we need to do. He says, first of all, everybody must first have, in verse 16, the word of Christ dwelling in you richly. You've got to, the word of Christ just can't be Sunday morning. It's got to be a rich thing in your life. It has got to be the basis of your decisions. First of all, wives, be in subjection to your husbands as fitting to the Lord. Or put it another way, honor your husband's headship. Honor your husband's headship. You don't even have to like him to do this. Say, well, I don't like my husband. You don't have to. A lot of you don't like your bosses, but you honor their position. This has to do with recognizing his divinely ordered position. It doesn't mean agree with everything he does or agree with everything he says. It means to honor him like Sarah, who called Abraham Lord. You say, what's the big deal? It's a big deal. To honor his position, even though you may not like his person, even though you may disagree with his point, the Bible says Sarah called Abraham Lord, and what did Sarah get? I'll tell you what Sarah got. She got a miracle. That's what she got. Ladies, 90 years old, been wanting a baby for 90 years. She calls Abraham Lord, and she got a miracle. God miraculously intervened in her life, and she got a miracle. If you want God to change your man, then you must honor his position, even if you don't like his person. Am I right, men? I figure I had to let y'all get that out, because I'm hearing too much back there. And that's what 1 Peter 3 says. It says, when a woman operates this way, it is precious in the sight of God. And some of you women need to apologize for your rebellious attitudes toward your husbands, toward their position. Because a man is head of the home by position. It's a post. Even if he's doing a bad job, when a president is a bad president, he still is the president. He still is the president. And you must say, Mr. President. You may not like him, you may not vote for him next time, but as long as he's in office, he's the president or the mayor or the governor. It is his post. And that's why even Michael doesn't bring a railing judgment against the devil. You think Michael likes the devil? No. But he knows his position. Secondly, husbands, love your wives and do not be embittered against them. Some of us men have attitudes. Men, love your wives. How do you know if you're loving your wife? Simple. What are you sacrificing for her? Because we have to love them like Christ loved the church. That has to do with sacrifice. Or let me put it another way. Make sure at the end of the day you've made more deposits than withdrawals into her life. At the end of the day, when you look at the balance sheet, have put more into her account than it's taken out. We men, all of us, have the propensity. We come home, we work hard, we want to know, was she cooked? No? And how come it's not done yet? We want to know this and that, and she's got to meet this need and that need. And she is constantly having to make withdrawals, and her account is empty. If you only make withdrawals out of your wife, don't be upset if there's nothing in the bank at night. Let me leave that alone and go right on. We are to make more deposits than withdrawals. And the question that all of us, I forget it, most men forget it, the question that we've got to ask when we wake up is, what can I deposit in my mate's account today? And you will find out, if you make regular deposits, the account will grow with interest. But if you make regular withdrawals, the account will come empty. Children, obey your parents. Honoring your parents is a mighty thing because it is the first commandment with promise. And the best thing a child can do is honor their parents. If you live in their home, eating their food, sleeping in their bed, It's like one time my daughter growing up, I just remembered this the other day. Ticked me off when I remembered it too. You know, she had this attitude. She had a bad attitude one day. And she didn't like some instruction. I don't remember the specific. And so she wanted to stomp to her room. Where you going, Crystal? I'm going to my room. No. You going to my room that I let you sleep in. Huh? As long as you eating their food, sleeping in their room, in the house where they pay their note, obey their rules. All right? And even when you move out, honor them. Honor them. And then parents, verse 21, do not exasperate your children that they may not lose heart. Encourage your children. Don't discourage them. Don't tell them they're nothing and never going to be anything. Tell them what their possibilities are under God. Correct them when they're wrong, but tell them what their potential is under God. When we do those simple things, as hard as it may be to do, we can make people thirsty for the marriage again. So what we need is not a divorce. We need a marriage tune-up. We bought our little granddaughter a doll the other day. We bought her a doll. She said, Daddy, the doll is not working. The doll won't work. Well, there was a reason why it wasn't working. It needed batteries. And no matter how much you try to fix your marriage, unless the batteries of God's power are operating in your life, you won't fly. You won't fly. So how do we get going? Well, Nehemiah 4:14 says, fight for your family. Fight. Some of us haven't gone to war. We've tried, but we haven't fought using God's weapons. And I guarantee you, if you will fight using God's weapons, he can save a home that you don't believe is salvageable.